Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit. Happy Tuesday morning to all of the listeners here in Greenville, South Carolina. We welcome your phone calls this morning to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We also would appreciate you emailing us your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. A lot of news and things happening today in the world, Christian Worldview perspective, and we are here to combat tyranny. This is the Tyranny Response Network. And again, I am the Tyranny Response Unit. Happy to be that, and happy to have an opportunity to do a small part in the fight for liberty and justice and truth in this land. And I appreciate your listening to the show this morning, too, because that means that you, too, are interested at least in thinking about issues, if not taking an active role in pursuing the truth and promoting liberty and free markets in the world. We thank you for your support of the show. And again, if you're interested in becoming a donor or other, and doing other kinds of things to support our activities here, you're welcome to send us an email and we'll respond back to you. Questions@policyofliberty.net is the address to do so. Well, this morning I'd like to begin the program by reading a little bit from one of my favorite authors, P.J. O'Rourke. Now, when I say that, P.J. O'Rourke is not a Christian as far as I can tell. He is a libertarian slash conservative, member of the Republican Party, sort of humorist. As such, he has some things and some language in his book that are just not appropriate for radio and probably not appropriate for most people to read in general. But here and there, he just has some wonderful quotations, and I was just reading his speech given to the Cato Institute, which is a predominant or the main libertarian think tank in Washington about 10 or 12 years ago. And in this speech, he was criticizing the Clinton administration, and he says this, and I thought it was quite humorous. "And the Clinton administration launched an attack on people in Waco, Texas, because those people were religious nuts with guns. This country was founded by religious nuts with guns. Who does Bill Clinton think who stepped ashore on Plymouth Rock? Peace Corps volunteers? Or maybe the people in Texas were attacked because of child abuse? But if child abuse was the issue, why didn't Janet Reno tear gas Woody Allen? You know, if government were a product, selling it would be illegal. Government is a health hazard. Governments have killed many more people than cigarettes or unbuckled seatbelts ever have. Government contains impure ingredients, as anybody who's looked at Congress can tell you. On the basis of Bill Clinton's 1992 campaign promises, I think we can say government practices deceptive advertising. And the merest glance at the federal budget is enough to convict the government of perjury, extortion, and fraud. There, ladies and gentlemen, you have the Cato Institute's program in a nutshell. Government should be against the law. Term limits aren't enough. We need jail." Well, a very insightful piece, I think, by P.J. O'Rourke, and he's clearly responding to tyranny in the best way, making fun, perhaps, along the way, and trying to have a satirical sort of a lance or influence into the whole issue and matters pertaining to liberty of the state, freedom, free markets, and peace. Well, here we have an example of governments doing precisely what P.J. O'Rourke said. In this day and age, it never seems to change. Governments are all about war. They're about mayhem. When I say governments, I'm talking about the major states we have today. They're about getting power for themselves and their buddies. They're about invading people's lives, not only the privacy, but controlling people's lives to a greater degree. And yet the Christian right still sits on the sideline of the Republicans and believes, well, if we just elect us another Republican, if we just get a few more seats in the Senate, then things will really change towards our side. Guess what, folks? It just ain't going to happen. You gotta wake up and smell the coffee, folks. The Republican Party has sold you down the river. They are using you, the gullible Christian right, to vote for them, get them elected, and they're just offering you some lip service to sort of pacify your strong feelings, your strong moral convictions. As a matter of fact, they have no intention and never have and have never shown any backbone whatsoever in promoting the Christian values in the United States. Now, you can say here and there might be small victories, temporary victories, such as Bush's ban on partial birth abortion for a little while. And sure, that did indeed save a few babies for a little while. But guess what? It also put a precedent on the books that gave government the ability to go back in and be more involved with the abortion issue when it shouldn't have anything to do with it in general. And certainly should not be condoning it, since it is murder. Well, here World Magazine has an interesting pair of articles in its recent issue, talking about politics and how Christians are involved with the Republican Party. And they in this one article written by Mr. Bob Jones, who, as I understand it, is the son of the current president of Bob Jones University here in Greenville. Although I can't be sure of that, someone would have to confirm that. I think somebody had told me that once before. At any rate, he writes an article saying, collision course, the always uneasy Reagan coalition of the libertarian and social conservatives is increasingly under strain. Government growth under President Bush and the rise of the social conservative agenda, some argue, may push the relationship to the breaking point. When George W. Bush utters the words, "So help me God," shortly after noon on January 20th, Washington will briefly become party capital, USA. From fireworks to disco halls, our balls, fancy... can't read what I printed. Fancy something to downtown barbecues. Republicans all over town will shed their button-down image to feet... four more years of power. By the way, I'm reading very small type. For some reason, this article printed out in the tiniest letters. Need to get my glasses. I don't have glasses yet. I'll have to go check out and see if I can find some glasses at work. In the midst of the celebrations, however, at least one Republican will doing a bit of soul searching with the media's sudden discovery of values voters. Another key component of the GOP coalition feels largely overlooked. Libertarian-leaning Republicans, the ones who put small government ahead of godly government, are beginning to wonder if they have a future in the party they have long considered their own. I think the problem is they have a movement that they have at the moment is that they don't have a figure like Ronald Reagan to get behind, says Doug Bando, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, a leading libertarian think tank. If you're libertarian-minded, Bush has a tremendous disappointment. Libertarians see social issues pushed to the forefront, and the same time they see massive spending increases in government growth, and they're pretty dissatisfied. Well, this is indeed going to be the case. Those who are libertarian-leaning should not, in fact, be voting for George Bush or in any way supporting him, because he will be guaranteed to be a disappointment, not only for those who are social conservatives, but for anyone who's a libertarian and values freedom, liberty, free markets, peace, and so forth, less government, a limited state, because George Bush is the purveyor of larger states, for more intrusive states, for states that impede and intrude in your rights. And we're going to have this collision course. And maybe it's time for those so-called libertarian-leading Republicans to just abandon the party and vote for Michael Badnarik, as they should have done last election. In the same way for true social conservatives, for those on the true paleo-conservative right, they should be exiting and voting for Michael Perutka, who ran in the last election for president, and be principled voters rather than going ahead and voting for just pragmatic, wishful thinking that George Bush is somehow a little bit better than John Kerry, the lesser of two evils, and somehow is going to help us out of our dilemmas here, make the country a better place. It's not, folks, and when we come back after the break, we'll see precisely why. This is Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement.
Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
And we're here indeed to make your day on the Tyranny Response Network, talking about the follies and foibles and foolishness of the Republican Party. Speaking of that party of dominant power right now in Washington, who just can't seem to come through with its promises to the Christian right. Surprise, surprise. We have George Bush giving more lip service yesterday to abortion foes. Bush phones, according to CBS News, Bush phones abortion foes. Waving signs that read "Stop Abortion Now" and carrying pictures of bloody fetuses. Thousands of protesters. I wonder if any fetuses are not bloody. I guess if you sterilize them first. Maybe they should start being a little more correct and maybe dipping the fetuses in alcohol, the dead babies, you know, draining the blood out or something, and then taking pictures of those instead. Perhaps people would be less appalled by these things. But yes, folks, indeed, when you do slice up a baby, when you chop them up, when you do burn them to death, there's likely to be some blood, and that's indeed what's going to happen. So that's probably why they carry these signs. But at any rate, carrying pictures of bloody fetuses, thousands of protesters have held a rally and march with inside of the White House. Abortion opponents from as far away as Texas, Kentucky, and Massachusetts attended their annual march against the Supreme Court's 1973 decision to legalize abortion. Demonstrators cheered as President Bush voiced his support for them by phone from Camp David. They also heard from a stream of lawmakers who say they support the cause. President Bush told abortion opponents over a broadcast loudspeaker Monday he shared their support for a culture of life and that this movement will not fail. This year's demonstration comes amid speculation that Bush may soon get to nominate new justices to the court. That could lead to overturning Roe v. Wade. We need most of all to change the hearts, and that's what we're doing, Mr. Bush said as anti-abortion activists marked the 32nd anniversary of the Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion with a day of rallies, protests, and other activities. The issue took on new urgency with the likelihood of a high court vacancy. Mr. Bush addressed marchers by phone from the presidential retreat at Camp David, where he had spent a long weekend. Well, there's some question and some doubt about whether the Republicans will be successful or even are sincere in being successful in truly appointing pro-life members to the Supreme Court. They can't even appoint a pro-life attorney general, and it makes you wonder if they'll really even think about appointing somebody who's pro-life to the Supreme Court. Past Republican appointees have been, folks, an abysmal failure. Even Reagan's appointee, I believe Sandra Day O'Connor was a Reagan appointee, was a true failure. The only ones we really stand out as consistently pro-life on the court are Scalia and Thomas, as far as I know, and perhaps you might have, occasionally Kennedy might waver over into the correct course, but for the most part, the justices are not in favor of life. They're in favor of death, abortion, death by abortion, and they use the euphemism, of course, as they all do, that they're preserving the woman's right to choose. What if they also would think about preserving rapists' right to choose? Or perhaps murderers' right to choose, like Charles Manson or serial killers. I mean, after all, you have to let them express themselves. At any rate, we have here, and I know there are, oh, now you're saying, well, Dr. Coben, we know there are more serious arguments against abortion than that. Those things are not attached to the woman's body. If they're attached to the woman's body, it becomes different. He's an intruder, and he needs to be dealt with as such if he's intruded. Really? Is he really an intruder? Unless you were raped, gal, I'm going to tell you something. He's not an intruder. You let him in. You invited him. He's your guest. Whether you sinned or otherwise, in allowing him to come in there, he's there by your choice. And 99.9% of all pregnancies are not from rape, which makes me think that this whole idea of the intruder is a spurious and foolish argument. But we're not going to get into that right now, since that's not a time for deep theoretical debate on the issue of abortion, because it would take an entire show. Happy to do that at some point, but not today. If you have questions, nevertheless, about abortion, or you'd like to go a little bit deeper or comment on anything I've just said, we welcome your phone calls to the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send us your comments and questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, we have here another article on the legalized abortion debate questioning the Republican willingness to change things. And they say Republicans offer the unborn 32 more years of Roe versus Wade. This is from Scott T. Whiteman, Esquire. Perhaps we must come to grips with the fact, he says, that with Republican President, Republican Senate, Republican House, and a majority of Republican appointees on the Supreme Court, 4,000 dead babies daily is the best the GOP has to offer. In a December 16, 2004 National Review article on the article A Pro-Life Mistake, attorney Clark D. Forsyth of Americans United for Life recommended the state legislators cease and desist in the introduction of legislation prohibiting abortion in their states. Attorney Forsyth counseled that since the Supreme Court is not pro-life, despite the fact that Republican presidents appointed a supermajority, 7 out of 9 of those justices, it would be folly to introduce such legislation at this time. An old proverb comes to mind, if not now, when? On November 2, 2004, the American electorate voted into office in a Republican president, Republican House, Republican Senate, and a majority of Republican governors. The Supreme Court is made up of a supermajority of Republican appointees. We have in America undeniable Republican Party rule. If the Republican Party is pro-life, now is the best and only time to effectuate any real pro-life legislation. So true, but don't not forget about the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and the Arlen Specters of the pro-life party, folks. These guys are clearly and brazenly pro-death, even though the party claims to be a pro-life party. Those pro-lifers who refused to support the re-election effort of Mr. Bush were told that the election was about the judiciary and the Supreme Court. Without good appointments, we'll have another 32 years of Roe versus Wade, we were told, prior to the election. And since, was there any evidence from the White House that there is any intention to nominate pro-life justices? In fact, has not Mr. Bush nominated several abortion-supporting judges to the lower benches? And wasn't his campaigning for Arlen Specter, who has promised to block all pro-life justices, evidence that Mr. Bush has no intention of creating a pro-life judiciary and eliminating legal abortion in America? Perhaps we must come to grips with the fact that the Republican President, Republican Senate, Republican House, and majority Republican appointees on the Supreme Court, 4,000 dead babies daily is the best the GOP has to offer. And I think that's a very insightful point, Mr. Weissman, and I appreciate getting the email sent to me. A lot of times on the Tyranny Response Network, we have folks who, of course, listen and support, and people will send emails to us, but simply email us articles that others have written, and this is sometimes very important. This was emailed to me this morning by Harold, and I appreciate Harold very much for sending the article, and I think it makes a great point. I'll be very surprised if George Bush does anything concrete to really help to reduce the number of abortions, because right now it's not that hard for him to stop it as it is. All he has to do is use the force he has as in the Department of Justice to promote life. He simply has to say the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, protect everyone's right to life, including human beings that are not yet born or not yet fully developed. And if it requires using the police force or the military in order to shut down abortion clinics, or to force people to not murder other people, then he has the power to do that. He can simply do it by executive order. Now, sure, he may face impeachment for it. He may face the wrath of the leftists and the homosexual movement or whoever else might be out there opposed in favor of abortion. But so what? I mean, if principle is really what's driving George Bush and not his own personal power, pragmatism, selfishness, and so forth, then it shouldn't be a problem for him to be willing to take up the cause and go after the abortuaries and abortionists and shut them down. It's just not that hard for the president to do to make this move. Politically, it's hard, but he's got the power to do it, and he refuses to do it. And, folks, he's going to continue to refuse to do it. He's going to give the Christian white lip service. The gullible Christians are going to support him, and hopefully not for too much longer, but they will, because they always have. They believe these guys are somehow going to help their cause, and in fact, they're harming us all the way through. You're listening to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview, with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Indeed, we're providing roughage for your brain this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. This, again, is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. You can reach me by phone this morning at 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, or email your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Just a quick reminder as well that if you're listening to the show, not listening between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, you're listening to recorded broadcasts, and we're very pleased that you are doing so. But the phone lines will obviously not be working live during any other time besides 7:30 to 9 in the morning Eastern Time. But the emails are received 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, shifting topics here a little bit, Fox News has reported the following: UN no natural disasters. And the Friday edition of Fox News, they have a reporter named Stephen Milloy who writes, "The United Nations is trying to blame natural disasters on, of all things, people. President Bush, however, is standing in its way. The UN is holding its second ever World Conference on Disaster Reduction this week in Kobe, Japan, scheduled for the 10th anniversary of the deadly January 1995 earthquake in Kobe and following the wake of the Indian Ocean tsunami. You might think that the conference's focus would be natural disasters. But the first indication that it isn't necessarily the case comes when you compare the titles of the current and previous UN disaster conferences. The title of the UN's first disaster conference, held in 1994, was the World Conference on Natural Disaster Reduction, which incidentally occurred during the UN-proclaimed International Decade for Natural Disaster Reduction. Natural disasters, as far as the UN is concerned anyway, apparently are no longer natural. Behind the 1984 like denaturalization of the Natural Disaster Conference is, of course, an ongoing effort of the UN, a leading promoter of unproven notion that humans are significantly altering global climate for the worse, to be able to blame people as opposed to nature, or more deadly and costly such as hurricanes, floods, droughts, heat waves, and the like. And the particular people that the UN would most like to pin the blame on for global warming would be deep-pocket Americans, American business, and the American government. As the global warming alarmist community likes to point out, the U.S. is the largest single contributor to the alleged global warming, emitting 25% of all greenhouse gases, while possessing only 4% of the world's population. Toward the goal of blaming the U.S. for what used to be considered natural disasters in order to eventually extract financial compensation, the UN conference's draft action plan is riddled with references to climate change, read U.S.-made climate change, as causing or contributing to disasters. The Bush administration rightly opposes the UN's effort to denaturalize disasters and has requested that the document's references to climate change be removed, but UN officials oppose such changes." Well, here again we have the true nature of the UN sort of conferences, the Kyoto-type conferences coming out. We see that the United Nations is there trying to get the money, like every other special interest group, from the United States, and falsely blaming America for the various problems that it sees occurring in the world. As a matter of fact, we do not see anything like what these alarmists want to say is happening in the world. As a matter of fact, we see a great deal of progress, the elimination of pollution. We have longer life expectancy. We have an incredible advancement on account of whatever form of liberty we have left in America and elsewhere in the West. The greatest advancements of humankind have come because of our industrial production. And although people complain, Well, the United States uses all these resources, like 25% of all the world's resources, and it's not fair because they only have a certain percentage of the population. What people don't see on the other side is the United States of America produces over 30% of all the goods consumers want, all the goods and services. Almost one-third of them are produced in the United States. So why wouldn't we consume a quarter of the resources? We're making what the world wants, folks. The leftists and the liberals are flat-out wrong. They somehow think that every person in the world is just as productive and therefore has an equal right to an equal share of the world's natural resources or some lunatic idea like that. It's simply a false idea. It's a fraudulent claim, and it's pseudoscience at its worst. And here the United Nations trying to actually say that tsunamis or earthquakes and so forth are caused by human beings. It's just another example of the humanistic, pagan, foolish thinking that is so adorns the left today. Folks, listen, Mother Gaia or Mother Nature or whatever Mother Earth is now being called by these folks is not upset with the way we're treating our planet and coughing out tornadoes and tidal waves and earthquakes as a revolt against humanity. God designed the world the way that he did. The problem with the world, like the problem has always been, is that there is sin in the world, and it has corrupted not only the human heart, but it has corrupted nature itself, according to what Romans chapter 8 and elsewhere in the scriptures we are told. And because of these things, we live in a fallen world that has imperfections, and disasters happen. They're terrible. They're horrible. They're not directly caused by God, although God controls all things, ultimately, according to his own will. And nevertheless, we will never be able to be free of these things until we reach the place that Christ returns and an eternal state is ushered in and ordered in, where we have a new heaven and a new earth wherein righteousness dwells. Until that point, folks, we're going to suffer the consequences of that fall in the garden. And, of course, these leftists do not accept that there was an Adam and Eve or a fall or sin or anything else, and therefore they're coming up with these different ideas, these rather pagan, silly ideas in my mind. The UN saying there's no such thing as natural disasters, they're all caused by men, is just another preposterous claim of those on the left. Well, that's pretty much all the news articles for the morning, although I do have a couple I want to go into the end of the show dealing with some economic issues. We should always talk a little bit about economics because for the lack of economic knowledge, we find so many people led astray by various things in our culture today. When we come back from our top of the hour break, I have a very important email to read, and hopefully we'll get some of your phone calls and comments to the show this morning. You can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also email your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Well, on a lighter note, starting the top of the hour, we want to turn again to the famous humorist P.J. O'Rourke, and just to note a couple of his comments, famous quotations from him. The first one is, "Anyway, no drug, not even alcohol, causes the fundamental ills of society. If we're looking for the source of our troubles, we shouldn't test people for drugs. We should test them for stupidity, ignorance, greed, and love of power." Well said, PJ. And in another quote, rather critical of us, and I think those of us who are Christians should take note when people criticize us and not immediately shine them on or simply say, discount what they have to say as irrelevant spew coming from unbelievers. PJ says, "Making fun of born-again Christians is like hunting dairy cows with a high-powered rifle and scope." And I have to say that he's right. We have to admit, I think, as Christians, that we are the most gullible part of any, one of the most gullible groups in American society today, because in mass, Christians turned out to support George Bush. George Bush is anything but the friend of the Christian. There's no way, besides lip service, that this man is going to do anything significant in promoting the cause of Christ, or even allowing the freedom of the gospel, free reign of the gospel, and the edification of the church in America. We have the erosion of liberties day by day, not only for the unborn, but also for churches who are suffering under persecution from government bureaucrats and trying to control what they say. We have legislation coming down for hate crimes, where pastors may be put into jail for simply preaching the gospel and saying simple things like, you know, homosexuality is sin. I'm not against or hateful of homosexuals themselves. We love them. We want them to repent and change their ways, but we're still going to say what it is. It's sin. It's sodomy. It's repulsive. It's a revolting thing before God, and it needs to be rejected by people, by Christians especially. They can be thrown into jail for that, perhaps. What's Bush doing to stop that? George Bush is going to be the one at the helm when our liberties and rights take even a more drastic slide under the Patriot Act and under the other acts of Congress and under the appointments or under the rulings of the new appointments to come, expected appointments to come on the Supreme Court. Wait and see, America. Christians have been gullible, and P.J. O'Rourke is exactly right when he says, and I'll read it again, "Making fun of born-again Christians is like hunting dairy cows with a high-powered rifle and scope. You just can't miss because we are so gullible and blow it so often because we don't think." At any rate, if you have some questions or comments for the show this morning, we invite you to call 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955 between the hours of 7:30 in the morning to 9 o'clock. That's when the show is live. Any other time, you're listening to a recorded broadcast, and either during the show or at any other time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you may send your comments and questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net, and we'll be more than happy to receive those and discuss them on the air. Well, a very important email came in today from Tim, and I wanted to highlight this email because Tim is following through with what the Tyranny Response Unit has been suggesting for the last couple of weeks about going to the front page of policyofliberty.net and scrolling down to the very bottom, where you'll find two document files. That's these PDF files that you you click on the link once and it opens the Adobe Acrobat Reader, and you're able to read these files online. The two links at the bottom are, first of all, the Deep Questions for the Dr. Coben's radio show, in which you'll find 17 fairly deep, sophisticated questions that I've drawn up and intend and have been asking on the air. Now, one of the reasons they are there is simply because there are many people who listen to this broadcast in California and Oklahoma and Maine and Texas and in other places who do not have access to the show locally in Greenville, but want to be able to interact. And by doing by having the questions there, they're able to read some questions and then think about what's being said, write in some comments by email or some questions regarding the questions, and able to interact with the show. So the questions are there for a very good purpose, and we hope you will pull up those 17 deep questions about the Christian worldview and do write in and discuss them with us by email. You're also welcome to call the show again at 864-201-6955 to discuss any of them live on the air if you happen to be in the local area. We are also this week hoping to implement our webcast, our broadcast on the internet. So for those in other time zones or in out of the Greenville area who would like to be able to listen to the show live and even be able to call in and participate on the show, you will be able to eventually click on a link off of Policy of Liberty to go to the live broadcast, and you'll be able to listen to what the show is, what's going on the show at any particular point in time. And that technology is now being implemented. It should be available sometime this week, and we'll look forward to being able to offer that to you as soon as possible. The second link on the bottom of the page, Policy of Liberty, is the quiz. Take the quiz. Which one of the four Christian worldviews of public policy do you espouse, do you hold? And there is a 15-second quiz that, if you click the link, will pop up. And 15 multiple-choice questions, not too difficult, self-guided, self-grading quiz. And you'll be able to determine whether or not you hold to a Christian Reconstructionist position, a liberty of conscience position, a pacifist position, or what I call the divine, a revitalized or reshaped divine right of kings position. That particular quiz is very useful and insightful, I think, for many people. And Tim writes in because he wanted to let me know, as I requested, what his answers were when he took the quiz and how he fared on it and what he thinks. We would encourage you to take the quiz and then email your results to the show. We'd like to get a count of exactly who's listening and what our listeners think after thinking about public policy for a little bit, maybe after listening to the show for a little while, just to see what they think about what the Bible teaches regarding public policy. Well, I'm going to read a little bit about this quiz. I'll just read most of the quiz questions online, and then we'll encourage your calls and questions to come in and discuss them with us, and you can see what Tim was thinking about things when he read through this. He says, Dr. Corbin, and by the way, my name has no R in it. It's Coben, Dr. Coben. My answers are highlighted in bold, at red, and underlined. Thank you for this wonderful insight. The Lord bless. Tim. What evangelical view of public policy seems right to you? That's what the heading is on this quiz sheet that you pop up on off the website. I say in here, there are two historical schools of evangelical thought regarding public policy: A, integrated authority, and B, competing kingdom. The former school views the state as at least a potential ally of the family and the church in establishing or advancing God's kingdom in the world. The state's role may be as small as simply restraining what God thinks is evil, or as large as actively clearing the way for the establishment of true religion in a nation. Some adherents believe that a strong nexus between church and state is necessary to have a godly society, where the church preaches to the state regarding what it should enforce, and the state upholds the biblical standard and receives via the power of the sword. The latter school views the state, encompassed in the biblical terminology as the kingdoms of this world, running a course that is antithetical to God's. Whether driven by its own cultural norms or Satan himself, the state competes against God. Nevertheless, God holds the ultimate reins on the state and uses it to accomplish certain ends in this world, such as bringing terrestrial judgment upon sinners or sanctifying his church through state persecution. Perhaps ironically, some competing kingdom adherents also view the state as restraining civil evil at times. Both of these schools have two branches or subclassifications, which make up a total of four Christian perspectives on public policy. The two branches of the Integrated Authority School are, one, the theonomy view or Christian Reconstructionism, and two, a revitalized or reshaped divine right of King's view. These views may be abbreviated simply as theonomy and divine right. The two branches of the competing kingdom school are, one, the Anabaptist or pacifist view, and two, the liberty of conscience view. By thoughtfully answering the 15 questions of the quiz below, you may find out where you stand, or at least what your tendency is, in terms of the Christian perspective on public policy that you adhere to. First, the following five questions will indicate which school of public policy appeals most to you, i.e., Integrated Authority or Competing Kingdom. And before we get into reading some of these questions, we want to run to a quick break. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning, saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Indeed, and right now we're in the middle of some very deep thinking and critical analysis as we begin to think about what the Bible teaches regarding public policy, the nature of the state, the Christian's response to public policy, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, and Tim has taken that first great step of not only reading what we just went through, the introduction to this quiz, but answering the following questions. And I'm not going to read every possible answer to these questions online because it just takes too long. I encourage you to go to the website, policyofliberty.net. Go to the bottom, the link at the very bottom, and pop up the quiz yourself and take the quiz. You'll think you'll find it very helpful and insightful. The first question is, do you view the state as a special sphere of authority under God like the family and the church? Tim writes, no. Do you view the state as a transformable institution under the dominion mandate per Genesis 1:26 through 28, where God creates man to have dominion over everything on the earth and to subdue the earth? He says no. Other than the possible exception of policies that serve as a deterrent to delinquency or as a means of crime control, as might appear in some societies, would you favor using public policy to promote righteous living according to biblical standards? And Tim says, no. Do you view the primary role of the state in promoting or upholding the kingdom of God in the world? And Tim says, no. Do you not view the primary role of the state as bringing terrestrial judgment upon sin or harassing the church in order to sanctify it under God's permissive decree? And Tim says, no. If you answered yes to all five questions, that fact would indicate your affinity with the Integrated Authority School. Conversely, consistent no answers would indicate affinity with the Competing Kingdom School, and that's where Tim is at, folks. He's along with the Tyranny Response Unit inside the Competing Kingdom camp. Answering three or four questions one way or the other would indicate your tendency or strong tendency to identify with one school or the other, although it might also indicate some inconsistency in your logical reasoning regarding policy matters. And over time, I find that as people continue to think about these things, even if they start with some mixed responses, they end up going one way or the other strongly if they really begin to think and analyze public policy and what the Scripture happens to teach about the nature of the state. That's just my experience with this, and I do talk to a lot of people regarding public policy and issues pertaining to the state.
Next, the following 10 questions will indicate which particular public policy perspective or view appeals most to you, whether it be theonomy, divine right, the pacifist view, or liberty of conscience. And this is question 6. Which of the following statements best describes your view of the source or foundation of the state's rules? Answer A would be God's law. In both the Older and Newer Testaments, when the state is a covenant keeper, men or Satan otherwise. Answer B is providence. The state speaks God's will to the church, its subjects as God's servants, or perhaps his oracle. Answer C is generally ungodly men under providence. God is doing his will in the competing realm through the state, through the acts of ungodly men, and Satan might be directly involved at times. And then Tim's answer was D. Again, the question, which of the following statements best describes your view as a source or foundation of the state's rules? Tim says Satan primarily is the source, as implied in Revelation 13, 2b, 4a, and also compare Revelation 12, 9a, where the beast that represents the state is said to be empowered by Satan, or at least the state's own cultural moral standard worked out in the actions of the men of this world. Question 7 is, which of the following statements best describes your view of the nature of the state? And Tim answers, D, the state is evil. It is the greatest source of oppression and affliction, with a likely exception of false religion in both biblical theology and history. Question 8, which of the following statements best describes your view of military service and the draft? And Tim answers D. Again, military service is often permissible, especially for just wars or secession movements, since the profession of arms was condemned neither by Christ nor John the Baptist. But the draft is usually tantamount to slavery and bad whenever it is the product of proactive public policy. Each believer should decide for himself whether or not to be involved in a military conflict. Question 9 says, complete the sentence. The state is ordained by God just as, and he wrote, Satan, the god of this age, 2 Corinthians 4, 4a, is ordained by God. Question 10, which of the following statements best describes your view of the church's role in political life? And Tim answers D, again, the church should not provoke the state and must not hope the state will help it achieve its godly ends. Nevertheless, individual Christian involvement, especially in areas like local politics, justice, and national defense, is left as a matter of conscience. Question 11, which of the following statements best describes your view of open rebellion, revolution, or resistance against the state by Christians? And once again, Tim answers with item D, revolution is morally permissible so long as no other sin is committed by doing so, and it can be led by anyone. Resisting a tyrant or objectional decree is morally right whenever such action can be done without bringing public shame on Christ or wrath on the church, and when no other sin is being committed by doing so. Tim is making a big statement here by selecting option D, saying we can indeed revolt or rebel against the state. We can indeed acts of civil disobedience, but only in the proper context and only when it's wise to do so and brings God glory. Question 12, which of the following statements best describes your view of what the godly goal of revolution would be? And he answers D, the godly goal of revolution is attainable only if and when the conflict can be prosecuted wisely and only when the overarching purpose of the revolution is to bring glory to God and to benefit his church and the proclamation of the gospel. Question 13, which of the following statements best describes your view of Christians lying to the state agents? For instance, by hiding Jews from Hitler, by not reporting all income on a tax return, etc. He says, D, lying to state agents is morally right when such action can be truly used to promote life, better stewardship, and God's glory. Item 14, would you consider reporting tax protesters, quote, tax protesters, unquote, people who hire illegal aliens or other rule breakers to the state authorities, especially when it is unlawful to not report a known offender? He writes D, or selects option D, because the Bible says that love does no harm to a neighbor, Romans 12:10, and my legitimate political and national interest must never supersede my commitment to other believers. And in the final question, which is, complete this sentence, Christian obedience to the state decrees is generally, and he writes D, pragmatic and expedient rather than generally moral, since Christians are charged to obey the state mainly to avoid its wrath, Romans 13, 4b, and thus to have the freest course possible in advancing the church or the gospel. That puts Tim squarely, with a 100% score,
in with me, the Tyranny Response Unit, the Liberty of Conscience School, because all of those answers that he gave are the precise answers that someone who is a Liberty of Conscience and hear it would provide. If you have a comment or a question about these views, we'd appreciate you looking at the webpage first and taking the quiz. But by all means, call the show if need be to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or if you prefer, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, send a comment or question regarding this or other matters that we bring up on the show to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
And welcome back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We're discussing public policy as it relates to the Christian life specifically, but we're also talking about liberty and freedom. We have folks who listen to the show who are Christians, who are committed believers, even those some of those who might have been gullible enough to vote for George Bush and be one of these cattle that P.J. O'Rourke described as simply could be hunted and shot down with a rifle and a scope. So easily misled, so easily identified as those who are gullible and so easy to make fun of because of our actions. What a laughingstock that we would get behind someone like, I say we, the church, Christians would get behind someone like George Bush, who let them down for 4 years and will surely let them down again for four more. At least that's my prediction. I'd love to be wrong in my prediction, by the way. It would be the greatest bit of humility to see for me to be able to say with all my heart, George Bush really did do something and stopped abortion. I would be the first one to apologize publicly, eat my words, or whatever else it would take. But guess what, folks? I just don't think it's going to happen. George Bush is going to continue to be a disappointment to people. At any rate, we have a couple other interesting items in the news today. One happens to be at my Rotary Club meeting yesterday. I had an opportunity to listen to the speaker, who I, of course, have no control in deciding which speakers come, but just happened to be yesterday a man named Ernie from the South Carolina Lottery. Now, the lottery is a huge policy issue, especially for Christians. Some Christians believe that the lottery is completely evil, that lottery money is tainted, that it's a way of oppressing the poor, that lotteries are an awful thing. And in this, when I read the Constitution Party's platform, I see a lot of similarity with the moral majority's perspective. And people like John Piper, a famous pastor, teacher of our day, he just would not want to take any lottery money if it were offered to him to support his church even. He doesn't want any of the tainted stuff. I wonder if he also would be consistent to say any prostitutes visiting the church that day should not
in any way give us the money, even if you feel the conviction of God to do so, or if you're repenting of your sin and want to come to Christ, we're not going to take any of your money because of how it was earned. But at any rate, that's a different theoretical question perhaps for then. The lottery, though, has another side of it, and there are pastors who would say, as I heard one say, if somebody were to drop some lottery money into the plate as it went by on Sunday morning, they would simply say, thank you very much. They wouldn't question where it came from. They would just use it for the glory of God. After all, the Bible does say that the wealth of the wicked is stored up for the righteous, and that is an interesting sight out of the Proverbs. Why not use the wealth of the ungodly? Well, a question came up on yesterday's show. Well, can we take government benefits? Here's another example of maybe using something of the ungodly to be stored up for the righteous. Can we take government benefits, especially if we've been stolen from by the state, by these so-called legalized democratic processes that provide for extortion to reign supreme in this land? In another show, we'd read about 52 different taxes that Americans pay today, ranging from sales and license fees down to things like the income tax and property taxes. Well, we pay taxes all the time. They are extracted from us in an extortionist manner. We're forced to pay them by coercion, and we don't, and for the most part, and we don't desire to pay these taxes. We just have to do it. Now, it is true on indirect taxes, we have a choice, like sales taxes and so forth. We don't have to buy the products that carry the tax. A gasoline tax, we could walk. We don't have to drive. There is a little more liberty there with those kind of indirect taxes. But nevertheless, bottom line is in all practicality of life, we are compelled to pay these taxes, and the government loots us through a scheme of extortion.
Well, Dr. Coben, we voted on that through our representative government, so therefore it's not extortion. Sorry, pal. The fact that it goes through a representative process or a so-called democratic process does not cleanse what the nature of the thing really is. It's extortion. It's theft. Those who receive federal funds, as Walter Williams keenly points out, are receiving stolen money. They're receiving stolen goods. We cannot justify this sort of behavior. So the caller called in and agreed with me, to his credit, of course, that you cannot receive, you must not as a Christian apply for a welfare state benefit, whether it be a student grant or some other kind of federal benefit, Social Security included, and expect to be righteous and just before God, because it's not a sin. Well, it's not a sin to be stolen from and have your money extorted from you by the state. It is a sin to go and steal from somebody else, and you are not justified by going out and saying and stealing some money from somebody else and saying, I was just robbed. And imagine you're walking down the streets of New York and somebody mugs you. They take $100 from you, and you've been robbed. You suffer loss. That guy takes off, and you can't get your money back again. Happened to me once in Mexico City. Somebody ripped off my wallet, stole the money in there, and the wallet, of course, I never saw it again. Went to the police, and they kind of laughed at me. Of course, I was in Mexico City, and maybe they wouldn't do that in New York, but I'm not sure about that. At any rate, it doesn't give me the right then to get in my outrage of what had been stolen from me, wield my .357 or any other weapon I might have and go and hold up another innocent person and say, I was just robbed for my $100 or whatever it is. Give me $100. I'm going to rob it back from you, steal it from you, rob it back. I'm going to steal it from you in order to compensate myself. It is unjust to do that, folks. We cannot, as Christians, support taking money from innocent people, no matter what end we have. The ends do not justify the means. Well, having said all that, and also having promoted that view even more articulately in Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book, which is available at policyofliberty.net for the small price of $10.95 plus shipping, or downloadable for $3.95. Besides making that argument in the book, I do say that there are exceptions. There are times in which we are no longer receiving stolen funds, and this whole issue of the lottery comes into play. Now, in the book, the only example I give that could possibly be an exception to the rule that I knew about was certain kinds of student loans that require immediate payment of interest, where a government guarantee is not really much of an economic benefit at all because the interest rates are still at market rates. In those circumstances, one might be able to say justly that you can take a student loan and still be just before God. You're not actually receiving any benefits from the state, not a lower interest rate. There's not a deferral of interest or things like that that taxpayers are on the hook for. Those loans, as far as my experience, are rare. They're not the normal variety. And so in general, I discourage any Christian from taking, or anybody who loves freedom, from taking a student loan, from taking benefits from somebody else, and certainly student grants. But lotteries provide a very different alternative, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to explain why at the top of the hour, or the last segment of the show, why lotteries might be entirely different. This is Dr. John Coben. This is Christian Worldview, and you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome back. Just a couple more insightful quotes from one of my favorite writers, P.J. O'Rourke. Reader discretion is advised, by the way, when reading P.J. O'Rourke, but nevertheless, a few things, a few jewels in there, as the Bible says, we need to separate the precious from the vile. I think God, speaking to Jeremiah, said, "You will be as my mouth if you separate the precious from the vile." Well, at any rate, P.J. O'Rourke says, "Giving money and power to government is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys." Interesting quote. Giving money and power to government is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys. He also says, if government were a product, selling it would be illegal. The mystery of government, he says, is not how Washington works, but how to make it stop. And finally, he says, the Democrats are the party that says governments will make you smarter, taller, richer, and remove the crabgrass on your lawn. The Republicans are the party that says government doesn't work, and they get elected and prove it. So true, PJ. You've hit it the nail right on the head. If you've been voting for Democrats or Republicans, you've made some serious mistakes in life. Christians should not be voting for either such party. The only vote is a principled vote, whether it be from the Constitution Party or my favorite candidate, Michael Badnarik, from the Libertarian Party and the pro-life wing of the Libertarian Party. Anyway, we're talking about lotteries before the break. We're talking about actually government wealth transfers, welfare state benefits. When is it okay to receive a government subsidy or to receive a government benefit, direct benefit like Social Security would be, welfare, food stamps, student loans, or student grants? When is it okay to get one of those? My answer is never. It's never okay to steal from somebody else. The only possible exception besides an occasional loan that, like a student loan that really does not have direct government subsidy effects in a redistributive manner, might be the case that somebody could make like this. I'm just about to send in a tax bill for $10,000, and coinciding with that, I can apply for a benefit for $10,000. And receive that check, sign the back of the check, and send it in with the bill for the tax that would be extorted from me and stolen. In that very current period, in that immediate period, you could argue, and I think correctly, that you're not stealing from anybody because you're simply using the government's own paperwork process to do an accounting shift, and the right hand pays the left hand without ever touching your bank account, either the tainted stolen funds or the extortion going out and the stolen funds being taken from you. Well, lotteries provide a very interesting alternative for folks. And it's especially important in the state of South Carolina, where the Tyranny Response Network is headquartered, because students are able to access what are known as Life Scholarship or Palmetto Fellow Scholarships based almost entirely on these lotteries. And so when this fellow was speaking to us at the Rotary Club yesterday, I was very intrigued to listen to his comments. Now, again, many Christians in South Carolina are up in arms against the lottery. They hate it. I only wish they would be as up in arms and hateful of Social Security, FICA-type taxes, or income taxes that are charged either at the state or federal level, or property taxes for that matter. The lottery is so morally repugnant to them that they just, on its face, despise the thing. But let me give you a different insight from a Christian point of view. The lottery is a stupid tax. It's a tax paid by stupid people. And I say that not to be calloused or mean, but simply to say that their payout rate is only 58%. If you're going to be a gambler in the first place, if you were to drive down through Atlantic City or where I grew up in Southern California, not too far from Las Vegas, you see billboards up saying our payout rate is 98.9% or 99.3% or 97.6% or whatever it is, somewhere up in the high 90s. The payout rate for the state lottery is 58%. It's not only a rigged game, a monopolized gambling form that's governed by the state, it's a bad shot. And sure, somebody is going to win, but the probability is so rigged against you that it's plainly a tax. It is simply a tax that government uses to siphon off from folks cash and fund different programs, specifically education projects. Yet there's a difference in nature between this tax and all other taxes that I know about. People rush to voluntarily pay it. They rush to voluntarily pay it. That means that people are not being stolen from with this tax. It's the only tax I know of that's like this, folks. And I don't know if you've thought about this. Again, this is a show for people who think. And maybe you've never thought about this, and that's good. I mean, you actually tuned into something this morning that might be helping you think about something in a different way. But think about the lottery in this way. It is clearly a tax. It funds government programs. It funds redistributive government programs, proactive public policies, which I detest in general. I think proactive public policies are evil because they use the force of the state to redistribute money or try to change people's behavior. But in this particular case, there is a huge difference. There is no coercive taxation involved. People run voluntarily to buy a lottery ticket. And when they buy their lottery ticket, foolish as it may be, and I don't play the lottery, by the way, in case any of you were asking, although I know Calvinists who do. They say they only need to buy one ticket. They just buy one ticket. They don't need any more than that, because in the providence of God, if they're supposed to win, then they're going to get it, and they will do so. And so maybe they consider that a good investment, $1 a month or something in the lottery. I wouldn't be opposed to that, folks. I'm not a moralist up here trying to tell you that even touching the single lottery ticket would be sin or something like that. Completely off the subject, my point is simply this. Those who run to buy lottery tickets do so voluntarily and in mass, to the point, he said during yesterday's meeting, that during the Powerball, when it was over $200 million, people would flood over the border from Charlotte, so that 12% of all tickets are bought from North Carolina to York County, South Carolina, and other parts of South Carolina, to the tune of 15,000 lottery tickets being sold per minute. A printing press, he said, does not run that fast, or it runs about that fast, or something to that tune. People were just buying these things like crazy. There was a voluntaristic willingness to pay the tax. What that means is, folks, the money was not stolen from them. Lottery money is not stolen funds. It's the only government money I know for sure that's the case. And then I asked this guy some very pointed questions yesterday, Ernie. I said, Ernie, if my son or daughter wants to go to college and applies for a life scholarship, will he be receiving any stolen funds? In other words, will he be receiving money that's mixed in with the state income tax funds or property taxes or other kinds of taxes? And his response was, in 2004, there would have been none that would have been taken from anything like that. It would all have come from these voluntary lottery taxes. I said, is it possible that it could come from those other sources? He says, yes, it's possible, although it's not likely. And the reason for it, he said, is in South Carolina proactive public policy, people are guaranteed a certain number of life scholarships in a year. And if the number of people qualify for it, they have to get it. And if they run out of lottery money somehow, then they would actually have to go into the state general fund and pay it off. Before they would do that, though, they would cut back all of the money that currently goes, which about one-third of it goes to K through 12 public education. None of that money goes to private education. And they would take that money from them first. They would cut the payouts to the public schools in order to make sure these life scholarships and Palmetto scholarships are funded. Well, that's very interesting because it creates a huge buffer before one could get to the stolen cash. You're actually only dealing with the voluntary cash. Now, there are some operating expenses of this inefficient public policy provision because it really is no longer a proactive policy. It's a policy of inefficient provision, the government monopoly of gambling in this state. It costs only about 12% or 13% to run it. There's 88%, more or less, that is actually direct profits, so to speak, from the gambling enterprise of the lottery here that's turned over to folks. So the bottom line is you're not receiving stolen funds if you take one of these things, one of these grants to students. Now, that may sound radical, and especially coming from me, who is opposed to any kind, in general, any kind of government handout whatsoever. Well, I'm not caving, folks. This is a different kind of tax. I'm trying to help you think about why it's wrong to receive government handouts and what's different about the lottery. If you have a question or comment about it, we'd love to hear from you. 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or send your comments and questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. On the Tyranny Response Network now, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Again, we welcome your phone calls to 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, between the hours of 7:30 and 9 in the morning, Eastern Time. If you're not listening at one of those times, you're listening to a recorded broadcast, and at all times we welcome your emails and for questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We also encourage you to please spread the word around about the show, not only here locally in Greenville, but about our upcoming webcast and the current availability of downloading our recorded broadcasts on policyofliberty.net. You'll find a link there to today's broadcast, yesterday's broadcast, and the previous days, as well as a special broadcast on Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2. The current day's broadcast is usually up and going as early as 11 o'clock in the morning on Monday through Friday Eastern Time, as late as, say, noon or 1 o'clock, depending on our technical challenges for the day. At any rate, we've been just talking about lotteries and want to summarize again the Christian worldview regarding this. The reason that receiving government money, Social Security, welfare, or student grants, student loans in general is wrong and almost all circumstances is wrong is because we are not as Christians to receive stolen money. We are not to participate in state programs that are designed to alter people's behavior and conforming them to become better status or living according to the principles the state designs. In general, Christians should have nothing to do with handouts, including Social Security, folks. Anybody over 65 that's relying on that little check, it's wrong. You're receiving something that you should not be receiving. It doesn't matter that you think you've paid into something and you've accumulated an investment account. It's not there, folks. It's simply a ruse that's used, a trickery of language to make you believe that somehow you had an investment there when all that money was confiscated from you, stolen, put into the general fund, and spent. And now by taking money, you're stealing from somebody else. It's a wrong thing to do. Lotteries provide a totally different means of financing the state. There is no coercion. There is no requirement that people pay. They pay in voluntarily and rush to pay this tax. It's a stupid tax. There's hardly no reason probabilistically to do it, and people run to do it anyway. And the money that's received from that can be received without being stolen funds. So we're off the hook, I think, as far as that government program goes. For those of you who are interested in this so-called life scholarship, I think we need to be honest about it being okay to receive. On the other hand, there may be other moral issues that prevent you from taking lottery money, and that's fine. Don't take it. I'm not telling you to go out and apply for this stuff. I'm simply telling you that from an economic point of view and from a moral point of view, at least in terms of the theft issue, there is no problem with receiving lottery money because it was not stolen from anybody. At any rate, and it's any kind of inefficient provision service, which is what this becomes, the whole lottery department, like the post office and so forth, all of them have involvement of people who indirectly are receiving stolen funds through their salaries. For instance, people who run the post office, postal workers, they thrive not on just the profits from their sales, but from government handouts or government transfers through income taxes and so forth. Well, these are wicked things, and there's no way to be completely pure of the taint that goes into any government institution. However, as far as the direct benefits go, aside from the fact that those costs are sunk and that money has been spent on those employees and the facilities perhaps, I'm not even sure that's the case in lottery. I think it's actually all paid for with voluntary taxes, including salaries. We still can, I think, participate with caution with the post office or with other institutions of inefficient provision, as Bible and Government describes in Chapter 1. If you haven't got a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, I would encourage you to do so and begin to think biblically. Also visit the links aforementioned at the bottom of page policyofliberty.net page homepage. Well, we have, just at the close of the show here, a couple of Fox News and CBS News items. First one is Merck dismissed, this is Fox News, Merck dismissed earlier Vioxx warning, scientists say. Merck and Company, according to the Associated Press, forced one of its researchers to remove her name from a study linking Vioxx to heart attacks, then criticized the findings before ultimately pulling the arthritis drug off the market last fall, two of the scientist colleagues say. Even after funding and agreeing with the design of the study, Merck publicly discredited our findings. Doctors Daniel Solomon and Jerry A. Alorn of Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital wrote in last week's Archives of Internal Medicine. Merck spokeswoman Anita Larson confirmed the company's action, saying Merck believed the study's conclusions were not supported by the data. The incident came about 6 months before another study prompted the drug maker to withdraw Vioxx. The journal contains several studies about Vioxx and Celebrex, which is still on the market, the once popular and heavily promoted painkillers advertised as stomach-friendly alternatives to aspirin. They're under congressional and regulatory scrutiny. Well, this is a joke, folks. I'm telling you, the FDA not only prohibits great drugs from coming to the market, it saves a lot of people's lives and delays the progress of good drugs coming on. They can't even do it right in trying to regulate safety in general. They are not allowing safe drugs to get on the market, and yet people, for whatever stupid reason, simply go back and say, well, you didn't do a good job the first time in letting this thing pass by you, and you're letting all these bad drugs onto the market, even though you apparently have this great screening process. But instead, what we're going to have you do is go back and try again. Why do you go to the failures of the world to try to see if they can get success? Why would anybody in their right mind, if they think about the failures of government, want to try again to rely on government to provide for quality and safety?
The fact of the matter is, folks, we live in a fallen world, and they were going to have occasionally products that are not safe, that do not have high quality standards. But that fact, it should not make us jump to the conclusion that government can somehow do a better job of making products safer or of greater quality. It's simply a false. It's simply fraudulent. It's not true, and there's no reason for us to believe, given government's track record, that such is the case. As a matter of fact, government has failed to produce high-quality, safe drugs in spite of the immense cost. $1 billion, perhaps, or $700 million to $1 billion just to produce any drug. Those costs are passed on to consumer, and those costs go only into the FDA's coffers or anything related to the FDA, including their contractors. Complete drain of siphoning off of wealth of Americans. For what? For nothing, folks. We're getting poor quality drugs by the imbeciles who try to run this bureaucracy called the FDA. Now, that's pretty strong language, I realize, but I don't know what else to say. And Americans are so gullible immediately to say, oh, the government failed. Merck and Pfizer, whoever, are making a bad drug, so we need to go and have the government re-regulate where it failed the first time. Why do we trust failures, folks? We're addicted to failures in the United States, and Christians are no better in thinking about this issue. They simply go along with the flow. Sad to say, we're coming up to our last break before the end of the show today. This is the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Yes, yes, you're on the Tyranny Response Network, especially on Christian Worldview. We've just solved one of the major questions that is raised against those of us who espouse limited government and getting rid of things like income taxes and property taxes. How are we going to finance the government? We've got to have some way to get them. We've got to force people to pay. Guess what, folks? You don't have to. All you got to do is install some of these lotteries. In fact, expand the lottery. Let all the fools of the world just pay the stupid tax and fund the entire state off of lotteries. There's no reason to have any coercive taxation to run a limited state, period. And the lottery proves it. Anyway, back to economic news of the day in the last section of the show. Feel free to give us a call, 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, or send your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. CBS News reports San Francisco may sack free grocery bags. San Francisco, this is another article in the Economic Idiocy Department. San Francisco may become the first city in the nation to charge shoppers for grocery bags. The city's Environmental Commission, did you know San Francisco has an Environmental Commission, is expected to ask the mayor and Board of Supervisors Tuesday to consider a 17-cent per bag charge on paper and plastic grocery bags. Their goal is to reduce plastic bag pollution. Environmentalists say plastic bags jam machinery, pollute waterways, and often end up in trees. Okay. Officials believe that the city spends 5.2 cents per bag annually for street litter pickup and 1.4 cents per bag for extra recycling costs. But grocers and bag manufacturers argue that many people already reuse their plastic bags. Other opponents call the plan an unfair and regressive tax on shoppers. And it is indeed all of those things, unrealistic, stupid, unfair, and a regressive tax. There is no reason that government needs to impose these kinds of constraints. Much like the bottle cap problem of the past, I guess it was 2-3 decades ago when we actually had to pull those tabs off the top of cans and they got thrown away and just littered around. People didn't take care of the litter problem, and then the manufacturers came up with that new design where the pull cap stays on the lid, as we all know. Well, guess what, folks? The problem of pollution is not a problem of people just being careless or silly and need to be forced to pay a higher price for their bags, and somehow because they pay a higher price, they'll litter less with them. The fact is, folks, the reason we have pollution is a government failure problem. It has nothing to do with simple free markets. Now, granted, you're going to have, even under a free market, not perfection, but some litter. It's a fact of a fallen world. You're going to have people who pollute, who damage the environment, and this is a bad thing. But the presumption that you can use government, the state, to somehow produce a better solution, less litter, higher quality of life, is not only debatable, it's rebuttable. We have too much evidence to the contrary that government solutions are no solutions at all. They screw things up far worse than the market ever would. It's not far from being a solution. It just makes the problem worse. What's the real problem with littering, folks? Why do people litter? Well, ask yourself a question. When they're driving down your neighborhood street, why don't you see people just heaving trash out into your yard out of their car window? What's so different about your area, fundamentally different than, you know, you're around your home, than it would be driving on I-385 from Greenville down to Columbia? Think hard, folks. What's the big difference? The highway is public. Your property, to some extent, although it's a feudal land title, is private. That means you have a special incentive to care for it and protect your property. Public property, no one has an incentive to care for. No one truly owns it, even though it's supposedly owned by the collective. That just simply means it's a euphemism for saying nobody owns it and nobody cares for it. And there is no cost to polluting on it. If somebody comes over in front of your house and just starts heaving bags of trash or litter all over your lawn, you might decide to pull out that double-barreled shotgun and walk out onto the porch and make sure he cleans up every bit of it and puts it back into his little pickup truck and takes his little dog Spot, too, and puts him in the back seat lest he get shot up before he leaves. You might defend your property. The same is not true for people on the highway. No one has an incentive to go out and defend I-385 corridor. And therefore, the simple fact that we don't have private property rights in land and there is government-owned land creates what we call a tragedy of the commons problem, an overuse problem. There's no cost to anyone to litter there other than the potential fines. And therefore, if they think they can get away with it, they will do so. That is why San Francisco has problems with litter. It has nothing to do with the irresponsible use of those who use shopping bags or buy shopping bags in checkout lanes. As a matter of fact, people who have those little bags, if they're anything like my house, they keep those things stored up and use them for throwing away garbage or collecting trash or perhaps holding certain things. Hey, you know, anytime you happen to not be able to find your gym bag, I mean, how many of us haven't once in a while in our lives said, well, look, I can't find my gym bag, it's broken or whatever, I'll just grab one of them little Target bags or a Walmart bag and throw some clothes and some shoes in and head out the door. People make use of those things. They recycle them already. There is no need, folks, to have legislation passed by these environmental nutty ideas to promote a cleaner environment. It's just simply not necessary. It's an excess. It's a ruse. It's a trick. It's something put there to make you think that the government can come in by adding a tax, a coercive, regressive tax like this, and correct a market failure, when in fact the failure already resides in the state. And the reason and the way we can resolve this problem is simply to privatize all property, make it what we call a lodeal, as a matter of fact. That means owned in one's own right, absolute ownership without any property taxes or regulation whatsoever. With that kind of strong property rights, you're not going to have the pollution problems we have today. Will you have some occasionally? Yes. You can't get away from, you can't make perfection or utopia in a fallen world. That's a Christian worldview. But neither do you have to concern yourself that government somehow can come in and be the white knight and save things, because it's simply not the case. Government usually creates problems, far more problems than it solves, and we cannot rely on the state in any way as a Christian, either economically or morally, to be our vicar, to be our champion, to be our white knight to come in and save us. Gullible Christians who go ahead and do so are only adding to the problem, and they're not working towards the solution. P.G. O'Rourke was exactly right when he said, and I quoted earlier today, making fun of born-again Christians is like hunting dairy cows with a high-powered rifle and scope. Sad to say, folks, We live a sorry existence because we are so gullible and so misled and so willing not to think and simply rely on labels like the Republican Party as if something in them can be helpful society and help our cause and engender our freedoms and promote liberty. It just ain't going to happen, folks. We need to be thinking on our own. This is a Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope today's show has helped you to think a little better. To send your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net, especially if you want to talk about things that we discussed today like abortion and the lottery or any of these economic issues. Be glad to hear from you. Christian, non-Christian, anyone alike who loves liberty, we're thankful to have you today, and we look forward to being with you tomorrow morning here on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben saying, God bless from Christian Worldview today. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.